This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi friends, and welcome back to another episode of Open House, a fresh, fun, and real podcast where I, Louise Rumble, invite you inside the therapy room with me to learn from some of the very best psychologists, therapists, and sex and intimacy coaches that I have found. No topic is off the table, no question too juicy, and no experience too shameful. At Open House, everyone is welcome. And we're on a mission to develop a new mental health experience for all, because we believe that true happiness is coming home to yourself under the layers and layers of you that society has told you to be. As ever, please remember that this podcast is for entertainment purposes only, and you should always seek professional medical help when necessary. Now, let's get into it, and I'll see you on the other side. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Open House podcast. Today, I'm joined by Dana Doswell, a nervous system and somatics coach that teaches highly sensitive and self-aware people to drop out of their mind and into their body. And I've just got a goosebump rush all over my body, which means that it's the real truth. She's really here doing this powerful work. And if you are familiar already, Dana's already joined us on this podcast before. She was one of my first ever guests. You guys know I'm bad with times and calendars. I couldn't tell you when it was or what year it was, but I know that it was definitely towards the early stages of Open House. And we both have come so far since that first episode. I've been following her forever since. She inspires me constantly about the importance of moving outside of the therapy room, getting outside of the conscious, analytical mind and into the body, into the nervous system. Yeah, she's a big guiding light for me because I always knew that that was the space that I wanted to take everybody in on the podcast, but we just needed to warm you up a little bit first. Today, we're going to be discussing shame. Shame has been one of the most corrosive experiences of my life, particularly sexual shame as an adult. But the more that I have gone on this therapy journey, I realized how much shame I was just holding in my family unit for being me, for being emotional, for having big responses, for being too much. Shame is fucking heavy. Dana is the expert. We are going to get into that. But first of all, welcome back. I'm so happy to have you here. Please tell me, has this been a huge part of your journey as well? Like, how did you decide, yeah, I need to share this work with the world?
Yeah. So there's one thing that you said, or two things that you said that really stood out to me that were a huge part of my de-shaming journey and really recognizing the role of shame, and you used the word corrosive. And I think that that really hit home for me because shame is such a depleting experience for your mind, your spirit, your soul, and your body. It's actually a more physiologically stressful state to be in than pure anxiety when you are essentially burdened by chronic shame. And the other thing that you said was about the sexual shame, and I want to dive into that a little bit if we have time. And for me, it was really interesting because it wasn't until I'd been a year into my healing journey, I was doing somatic therapy. I was coming off of like 9 years of mindset work and self-growth. So I had so much self-awareness and I'd started to see some improvement in how I was feeling. I had chronic cystic acne and I'd had some improvement in that just simply from feeling more of my feelings and having a really safe place with my somatic therapist that I was working with. but I always felt like there were these deeper patterns that I couldn't quite get a handle on. They were so unpredictable, and I was really scared of my body because of that. And it was this experience of when life was going well, I felt like somatic therapy worked. And I have this awareness now, as soon as there was something in my life that challenged my identity, I would just lose it. This is where I would go into a state of collapse, of shutdown, like self-isolation. The, you know, intense coping mechanisms would come out, like smoking weed, impulse purchasing, spending $1,000 in 5 minutes on a really nice sweater or something like that. I really didn't need that. And it was just such an extreme form of escapism for me. And then this cycle would move through my body. I'd wake up one day and I would feel like I snapped out of it and come back to normal. And at this time, I was the director of sales for a multi-million dollar software company. I was living in Colombia. I was selling into North America. I was becoming bilingual in Spanish. I looked like I was just this boss babe, competent, has it all together. And it was just such a weird mind fuck for me, because it was like, on one hand, I would have these extreme collapses and then it would almost feel like it wasn't real. And then I would be back the next day selling to the VP of a massive food service chain in North America. And it was just such a weird thing. So for me, when I had this realization that it was shame, I had a huge emotional response and physical response in my body, because I could feel that it was that layer deeper. It was this foundational piece that I had never really accessed before. And because I'd had this year of somatic therapy, I understand now that I'd been creating enough regulation and safety to witness these shameful parts of myself, which are extremely intense parts to be in contact with, and one of the reasons why it's very difficult to access. And then as I activated what I call a de-shaming practice, so I would do things like invite my friend over to my house when it was disgustingly messy. That is, for me, my ADHD, I did not get the cute OCD, I need to have a clean space ADHD. I got the ADHD that's like, I can leave food out on the counter for 3 days and I will be able to ignore the fact that it's there and it's disgusting. And so I would actually let myself be seen in situations where I usually experience deep shame. And it was through that vulnerability in safe spaces, in community, that I was really able to heal, as well as normalizing it for myself that, oh, it's actually okay that I'm like this. That doesn't mean that I'm unworthy. So I could go off about that, but that's just a little bit about how unraveling shame has been so relieving for me. And it was the missing piece for me to actually feel safe being myself.
Oh, I have so much to say here. I always say you just need one person, just one person that can see you for the truth of who you are. And that was my ex-boyfriend, now my current boyfriend. And I have one friend, and we just always say we have to tell each other everything, not like in terms of an obligation, but just because when you share those deepest, darkest feelings, nothing is as bad as when you are holding it inside of you. And even yesterday, I was texting her this huge slew of things. I feel this, but I just don't know about this. And I look back and I'm like, oh my God, I would never be this truthful and this honest before I had started this work. But now I understand the healing power of just de-shaming, as you like so beautifully call it. But before we go off on that route of shame and de-shame, I just want to start with the absolute basics, because I have had a life driven by shame, but I never, ever realized it. But the first therapy session I ever went into, that therapist knew. He told me the problem is shame. You need to get this book called The Compassionate Mind. And then one day when it clicked, I was like, holy fuck. Everything makes sense. Why I've been holding so much heaviness and darkness on the inside whilst having to be perfect on the outside. So let's start with, what is shame?
Yes. Okay. So I want to give a lot of credit to Brené Brown here, because she is so incredible with shame research. Very, very simply put, shame is an overall emotional experience. And that's really important. We're talking about including the way that your hormones are running or not running properly in the moment of experiencing shame. It's an overall emotional experience of believing that you, as you are in that moment, are not worthy of having access to safety, love, and connection, which is every single thing that you are born knowing that you need as a human being in order to survive. So to simplify that even further, shame is the experience of feeling unworthy of survival, which is why it is so existential, it is so heavy, it is so deep. And one way that's really easy to understand how this differs from other emotions or emotional experiences is shame is I am bad versus guilt is I did something bad. And what I also like to give clarity on is what does this mean really simply in terms of the kind of behavior that you'd exhibit? So shame is very linked to isolation and withdrawal versus something like I did something bad is you might experience that for a couple minutes or even a day, but you are going to have some type of bid for connection and or you're going to be able to self-soothe and regulate enough that you're like, yeah, I did something bad and that's okay and you can move on with your life. So it's not fracturing your identity or sense of self, meaning it's not disrupting or corroding the way that you see and experience your own self and your own body.
This is so powerful, particularly that statement around I am bad versus I did something bad. And I talk about this often on the podcast about how when I was 18, I cheated on my first ever boyfriend and it was so awful. He walked in, it was the first week of Freshers Week. Like, oh God, it was so traumatic on so many layers and everyone knew and everyone was talking about me. And oh, it was just like one of the most horrendous experiences of my life. What I then later learned in therapy, and it took me 10 years, let's just say this here, to get into therapy. So for 10 years, I lived with this belief that I am fucking bad. Like I am an awful person. But what I understood is people would say to me, it's not that bad. People make mistakes. People cheat on their partners all the time. But what I learned in therapy is it went so much deeper because it was a belief that I already had at the core. It was just this experience that woke me up. And then on top of that, at some point after that, I contracted the HPV virus, which again, 10 years later, I was like, now, I mean, I don't even have it anymore because my body's cleared it, but I didn't have anyone around me to say, oh yeah, that's really normal. 90% of people have that. It was like, this is my punishment. You are bad. Like you are a bad, dirty person. So it was like the shame of my childhood then tied into the sexual shame in adulthood. It was fucked. It's probably why I've had pelvic pain for 15 years of my life. But unpeeling the journey made me realize it started way before that moment I cheated on my boyfriend. Do you think that's fair to say?
100%. And there's two things that I really want to reflect back at you that stood out to me. So I'm going to come back to this in a second, but the words dirty and pure, for sure. And exactly what you said, it was a belief and it was a pre-existing belief. And one thing that I really want to conceptualize for people is I think that the word belief, especially because we had such a big explosion of mindset work, belief can still feel like it's really up here. But what I want people to really truly understand is a belief is an entire set of coded nervous system conditioning that is mostly unconscious and unconsciously or subconsciously filters your reality to reflect that belief back to you. So we're not just talking about like, I was consciously believing that I was bad and then this reinforced it. It's like, no, quite literally the reality that your nervous system presented to you was always going to reflect back to you that you were a bad person. And then this experience seemed to hit on such a deep layer that it was no longer something that you could numb out or escape from. It was just completely in your face. In my own experience and seeing this with a lot of people, experiences like that are on in some way exactly what we need. Because that brings up the deepest of the deepest shadows for us to have a relationship with and see a part of ourselves to be able to then make it conscious and say, do I want to continue engaging in this? And sometimes it takes 10 years of suffering to get to a point where you're like, okay, this is not normal. This is not actually what I want. This is not feeling good. And that's what happened with you. So leading that into something that I think is so powerful and why I love language and articulating things well is in our society, and I would say overall, but specifically in North American culture, there is a, whether or not you are religious, there's a massive amount of religious influence, this Christian and Catholic belief system, which uses words like dirty, sinner, pure, right? And this is, I would say, even more valuable for women. And it's so important to break down and deconstruct that language because the way that it is communicated to us is if you do this, it means this about you as a person. That is shame. That's not just I did something bad as a behavior. And that is such shame reinforcing language to be like, I'm dirty, I'm a sinner because I did this. It means this about who I am, what's going to happen to me. And that is debilitating. That is like staring at a concrete wall being like, how can I ever break out of this? And that causes more reinforcement of shame, more reinforcement of collapse in your nervous system, which leads you to just internalizing that. And that can 100%, and we can even look at the science to back this up, causes things like chronic pain. Your nervous system is in a constant state of communicating threat to your entire body. And that threat is often going to be centralized around the physical area of your body that you associate with that experience, which if it was sexual, then your pelvic floor, oh my God, yeah. The last thing that I'll say on this before, I know you probably have questions and you always have amazing questions, is when we're also looking at healing in the way that we relate to our bodies, because of some of this or a lot of this, what I would call masculine-based spirituality, which is all about ascending, purity, coming out of the body, ego, discipline. For women, that is not how our bodies work. It never has been. We are innately more communal than men. Discipline, when our hormonal cycles are not consistent, needs to look different. And something I have found a lot of relief in with my de-shaming is looking at spiritual descension into the body, into the root, into the pussy, into the pelvic floor, into the earthy, bloody, primal part of being a woman, which is so linked with that sinner, dirty girl kind of thing. So I just wanted to add that in there because for me, I'm like, I don't give a fuck about ascending anymore. Like, you can take your ascension and go away from me. I think that you can experience the universe and the earth in your own body when you do not bypass your human experience, and you have to de-shame in order to not bypass your human experience.
Oh, I have so much to say. Well, first of all, I agree with literally everything you said. Second, you mentioned this term called shame reinforcing language. What I want to ask you about is shame reinforcing actions. Because if we just share a part of my story, and you know, I didn't grow up particularly religious. I definitely didn't grow up with any of these conscious beliefs around purity or dirty or anything like that. I just was young. I enjoyed hooking up. Like, it was fun. I definitely didn't come into that with any conscious issues around that. But when this went downhill and I was like labeled a slut straight away, and then I contracted this STI, which obviously in my head, I was like, I'm a slut, even though like I wasn't. And who cares? What even does a slut even mean? Because you can be a sacred slut. And that's a big part of my healing journey. Anyway, because of that, I went into shutdown. I was like, I am going to fight against what everyone thinks about me, even though this was the first person I had ever slept with. So I felt so wronged by the fact that I had been labeled this way that I just shut down. Then what would happen? I would get drunk. I would take drugs. I would then end up hooking up with people. I was promiscuous 100%, but I was promiscuous from such a wounded place. And it was because I wanted love and I wanted people to like me and be attracted to me. So I'd hook up with them. And then the next day I would feel such shame and guilt that I would want to go back into shutdown again. That just repeated. And it got to the point in my 20s when people were like, it's fucking weird that you don't sleep with anyone. Like, I really, really, really shut down until I was drunk or high. And then I would be like the dirtiest fucking girl you've ever met in your life. So it was like this crazy journey from one side to the other. And it wasn't until, like I said, I met my last partner and he said to me, you could have slept with 300 people. I wouldn't care. You could have slept with 30, 300. I just love you for who you are. And every experience you've had has just been part of this rich pageant of life. And it's made you this beautiful, sensitive, incredible lover. And then he asked me, how many people did your ex-boyfriend before me sleep with? How many people? And, you know, numbers are irrelevant. But I said, yes, a lot of women. And that's when I started to look at, oh, so it's okay for men to do that. But it's not okay for me to do that. That plus him just loving me for who I was and me being able to be honest sent me on my de-shaming journey. And today I love my body, myself, my sex life, my connection. I love the people that I've slept with. And sure, I hate some of them because they were traumatizing. But I like that I'm experienced and that I've lived and that it's made me this person that I am today. But yeah, let's talk about shame reinforcing actions. Do you see people either pushing away or maybe like actually pulling towards those beliefs?
Yeah. So I love how you lay this out, because it's so clear. So we can also call these self-defeating behaviors. So to give kind of a micro example, and then I'll dive into yours, is this could be, and I did this for a long time, asking people to hang out that didn't make me feel good about myself, but continuously hanging out with them. I look back and it's like, why did I do that? Or you sleeping with people and feeling like, okay, the only time I can do this is when I'm high and I'm drunk and I'm just like being the dirty girl. So this is where I want to talk about a concept that I have at least found can sometimes be presented in a little bit of a woo-woo way, where people are like, your entire life is a mirror of who you are. And it's like, your entire life is a mirror of what your nervous system feels safe to experience, because it knows that you will survive by engaging in that. And this is also where it's really important to bring in identity, because shame is the one or main emotional experience that changes the way that we perceive ourselves, which is our identity. Our identity is how we navigate the world around us. So to just give a really clear example, I'm tall. I'm 5'10". I'm not a super like thin person. I've played a lot of sports in my life. So part of my identity is feeling like a big woman. And that's something I really had to kind of like deconstruct and look at, and so on and so forth. But that means that the way that I relate to other people, one of the first things that my subconscious has learned how to sense is, how much taller am I than this girl? How much thinner is she than me? How much shorter am I than this guy? So on and so forth. So just to help you understand, is your identity is the psychosomatic way that you have learned to navigate the world in order to do your best to ensure survival. So what this means is, when we look at a situation like what you went through and how you had this pre-existing belief about you reinforcing at such a deep level this probably hidden belief that was hidden or suppressed, or you didn't even really know existed. And then what ends up happening is, during the quote unquote day, or when you're not drunk and you're sober, there is a push away from that, a rejection of your body being back in that state. But because that kind of a state is so intense, it is more addictive than being regulated or being disconnected. And this is why shame is actually an addictive emotional experience to have, because it is so physiologically intense for us. And so your body, on one hand, was pushing it away, but pulling it towards you. But the only time that it seems to me that you felt enough removal of shame, or enough numbing of your shame, to do things like have sex is when you were drunk or high. And this is so common for a lot of us, right? Like, you get drunk and your inhibitions fall away. And it's like, we talk a lot about the cliche thing. It's just like, drunk heart speaks a sober mind, or whatever it is. And there's nuance to that. But your nervous system was pulling at the same time that it was pushing away from something. And that is a coping mechanism, like, if I've ever seen one. So to me, that makes so much sense. And that's a self-defeating behavior. But what I would actually say is, the coping mechanism, the getting high and the getting drunk, is more the self-defeating behavior than the having sex was. Because having sex and having that connection is a very natural, beautiful, normal human desire.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And when I took out the alcohol and I went sober, that was when my real healing journey started, because it was like, this is me. And I don't do things like sleep with people that I don't want to, because we were having fun and it just went too far and I was too drunk to say no. And that was really where my healing really started, was removing that chaotic cycle, the gasoline, like the alcohol that just, like, every single time I drank, it was just like always ending badly. And then the other part of that, like you said, is the safety to be seen. Honestly, when I entered into this relationship with my ex-boyfriend, and it was just so full of love and care and there was no judgment, that was when I went to get a cervical smear, because he was like, you should just find out if you still have the virus or not. And I went to get this smear that I would never have done when I was 20. I didn't want to fucking know. I was like, I'm just going to pretend that this doesn't happen. And I went to get the smear, and the smear was negative. And in that moment, it was like, I came back into my body, because it was like, I could just come back into the thing that had caused me so much shame.
Yes. And I think this is like a great segue into just generalized shame. I was journaling about this the other day, and I was like, when I was able to start to release shame, I was able to see life challenges as normal parts of life, instead of reinforcement that because I'm me, life is challenging. And that is exactly what you're getting at, is it's, you get a test of something and it comes back with X result. And someone who has a lot of this internalized shame, which means that the way that you see yourself is through a lens of shame. The way that you relate to yourself in the world is through a lens of shame. It's this reinforcement. Oh my God, of course it's like that because I'm me, not just because being a human is fucking insane and hard and weird. And we can't even conceptualize what it actually means to have a human experience. But we know that it's incredible range of emotional experiences that we feel through this human body in our senses. And when we look at the world around us, and anytime something goes wrong, like someone steals your parking spot, or, you know, a guy, you realize, oh, you just used me for sex again. It's like, oh, because I'm Dana, that happened to me. Oh my God. Instead of just like, okay, this is reality. This is how the world is. What can I do to improve my environment and how I feel? It's two totally different ways. And the last thing I'll say on that, because this was so empowering for me, is when I really released shame and went through this shame healing journey, not only was I able to let go of this narrative that because I'm me, life is challenging, I started to more consciously influence the type of challenges that I had. That is where life is like and juicy and yummy, because now I'm like, how do I still run my business and book this surf retreat where I'm going to Nicaragua and I'm going to be surfing every day and I'm going to be with people? And like, how do I make that work instead of how do I get shame out of my body? Two totally different types of challenges. One is forward looking. It's building life force energy in your body. It is about self-expression. And the other one is just like, how do I deal with constant reinforcement that I'm a bad person? Like, I don't want those challenges anymore. And that's what releasing shame allows us to do.
Oh, yeah. And the challenges in relationships change as well. I look back and of course I was full of this shame, which stems back to childhood often. And we're going to get into that in the next part of the episode. But for me, it was like, because I was holding this shame and this belief that I probably wasn't lovable and I was probably hard to love. Otherwise, my dad would have communicated more that he loved me and X, Y, Z. Because of that, I didn't always end up in toxic relationships, but I ended up in a real bad relationship for many years. And I was like, this is love. No, Louise, that was physical and emotional abuse. And you called it love, because inherently some part of me didn't believe that I was worthy of being treated any differently. Plus my nervous system was naturally addicted to chaos, which is the definition of a toxic relationship. So for me, healing the shame and doing the shame detoxing work, that is when I started to really experience pure intimacy, pure joy, pure love, pure passion. I feel emotional talking about this, but it's been powerful. And I really feel for the younger me that didn't have people like you. I didn't fucking know what shame was. You could have told me for 10 years, oh, you're ashamed, or not even you're ashamed, but you're holding shame. And I would have been like, I'm not. I like myself. I like myself. And I just didn't have that level of self-awareness. Do you feel that people get stuck in their mind rather than feeling it?
Yeah. And that's quite literally the exact kind of person that I tend towards, and why I specifically say people that are highly self-aware, highly sensitive, and are stuck in their head, and mostly women, I would say. And a lot of women that are in that category, I think now we're realizing there's this whole spectrum of neurodivergence, and a lot of us probably fall somewhere along those lines. I think this is a really cool segue to chat about invisible shame and also how normalized shame-based behaviors are in society, so we don't know what we don't know. And the whole example of what you went through in university, I think, is a really good example of that. I've had so many conversations with people that have come in my communities and my programs, and as we start to map out this invisible shame, I'll have people say, my mom never had access to our bank accounts. What do you learn from that? If you are a daughter looking at that, or a son looking at that, what meaning does that hold for you? And the other part of this, and this is why that this idea of ascension of healing versus descending into the body, I think, is so powerful, is we are so obsessed with the mind, optimization, logic, so on and so forth. So a lot of people are actually incredibly disconnected from their bodies for most of their lives. So they don't even really know what shame would feel like. Or when they feel bad, they don't even really know that they feel bad. And they have these layers and layers and layers of coping mechanisms that their body subconsciously deploys to prevent them from feeling more of these things. Because we are taught that if you express emotion, specifically vulnerability, you know, that you need help, that you're not feeling well, those things are going to be shamed. it's just like society. Sometimes I look at it and I'm like, we're one giant coping mechanism to prevent people from emotional and self-expression, because most people do not have the capacity to hold the truth of the human experience, to hold the truth of themselves, or to see the truth of how they really feel. So that feeling that you had of, yeah, I do like myself. It's like, okay, I believe people that say that when I can see that they are in their bodies. If you are not in your body, if you don't know what it feels like to be connected to your intuition, then no, I'm sorry, I don't believe you. And you're probably completely stuck in your head. And when you start feeling your feelings, you're going to have a whole identity crisis probably, but you're going to also realize that, oh my God, everything was just coming from here. And what I believe I needed to say in order to be accepted by other people and to be seen as logical and to fit in with the way that society wants me to be, versus actually dropping down into the body and being like, oh my God, actually, when I talk to this person, it really doesn't feel good. And it actually feels really bad in my body.
I want to ask you something. So basically in the shower this morning, I was thinking about anxiety, and I was thinking about how many people today are anxious, how many people today are on anxiety meds, and they're just trying to band-aid the solution rather than ever actually working out, like, what is my body trying to communicate to me? I always ask myself, how does this make me feel? And because now I can drop into my body, I get little waves, and they're either good waves or they're bad waves. And the bad waves feel like anxiety. And what I'm starting to realize is, like, if you have this deep shame wound, I think personally it can show up as anxiety, because your body has this feeling that's trying to come up and you don't know how to decipher it because you've never been in your body before. And it comes up, you just push it down, you distract, you scroll, you do whatever. Do you think it's fair to say that this wave of discomfort might be that shame that is trying to come up and to communicate something with you as a vehicle for saying, hey, we got some work to do here. Let's work on this friction and this tension so we can coexist together lovingly.
Okay, so I love that you brought this up. There's a couple of things that I want to mention here. So number one is that shame causes hypervigilant self-policing. What happens when the body feels that we're self-policing ourselves is that wave of anxiety to be like, hey, something doesn't feel good. What I want to differentiate between here is someone who is in a full state of shutdown collapse as a result of shame. This is where you pretty much have no activation left in your body. You're probably not feeling things like anxiety. You're depressed. Like, you're in a depressed state. You're depleted. You feel very existential, hopeless, and kind of numb. And then there's functional freeze, which is a blended state of shutdown and activation. And this is where shame is tricky, but very interesting. There's this shame sandwich that happens. So you have the shame, then you have anxiety about the shame that you experience. You probably have coping mechanisms like that way that you suppress the shame to deal with the discomfort of shame. But then a lot of us have shame about the coping mechanisms, or we're scared. And anxiety and fear are so interrelated, because it is really terrifying to be sensitized in a body that you have never really been sensitized in before. So as you feel exactly what you said, this wave of anxiety, and again, thinking, if you were to just talk to a random person on the street, or I even see this, you're at family gatherings, then I'll say something like, you know, I was feeling a bit anxious today. And my super intelligent, like, logical uncle is just like, oh, weird. There's no empathy. There's no normalization. Yeah. It's just like, I can tell that I make him deeply uncomfortable when I share that. And that's the response that I got most of my life if I ever shared those things. There's so many different parts of you that are interacting in different ways. And you have this, like, deep shame that is almost trying to bubble all of these things to the surface and communicate through the symptoms of your body. But it's really scary. And so you push it down. So there's, like, a couple of things that I think maybe people could take away from what I just said, of even mapping, like, where are you? Are you in that full-blown shutdown? Are you in this blended state? Are you like Luis and you're in the shower and you're feeling a wave of something, and do you push it down or do you let it come out? Do you allow yourself to be uncomfortable and normalize it in the moment?
I love this so much. I really do think that, like, a huge part of anxiety, other than just your body being in biologically the fight or flight response, really is tied to the emotional repression that's trying to come up, the sadness that's trying to come up, the anger that's trying to come up. And we just push it down as a society because we're not taught how to use it or how to work with it, really. And I also think people are lying to themselves about a lot of things in their life, that they're not actually happy, they're not actually with the right partner, they're not actually living in the right place. And if you are lying to yourself, yeah, your body is going to go into that shutdown at some point, either functional freeze or full freeze. We've gone in reverse on this episode. We've started with adulthood experiences, and then we touched on how they didn't actually form in teenage years at all. They formed much further back. I want to ask you about implicit shame versus explicit shame. And really, I want people to start to understand if they were shamed in childhood by their family, in their school unit. How does shame show up in those formative experiences?
Love that. So explicit shame is when it was obvious that you were shamed. So examples of that, I experienced a lot of explicit shame. I was bullied really badly when I was younger, like literally every single day I was bullied emotionally, I was bullied physically. So that is where an observer would look and be like, yep, that is shameful. Saying, doing things to someone that would make them feel really badly about themselves. That is explicit shame. Other ways that can show up is like harassment, abuse. Like you have an alcoholic dad or mom that's like yelling at you all the time. And what I want to be really specific about is the language that is used is really important. And what I mean by that is shameful language is, why are you like this? You, right? So we're getting back to that because you're bad. And that's really common in parents that need to use shame to get you to submit to what they want you to do as a form of control. And in general, shame is used in the school system to get kids to submit to what the teacher wants in the classroom, so on and so forth. So explicit shame is bullying, harassment, abuse, the obvious stuff. Implicit, invisible shame is so tricky. This is inherited shame. This is so intricately weaved into our society. So I'm going to give you a couple examples to help you conceptualize. So math as a core subject, art as an elective. What does this say about the value of that skill set and where it lies within our society? And this can then translate to classic things like, you're never going to make enough money from doing art. Don't do that. Don't engage in that. Other types of implicit shame, and really what implicit shame is, the internalized shame stories that your nervous system learns by observing and experiencing how other people respond to your self-expression, as well as observing the behavior of others. So let me give you an example of both of those scenarios. You're walking down the street with your mom, and let's just say your mom is like, my mom is like a 5'9" blonde bombshell, could go out in a bag and just look unreal. And on top of that, she loves doing a little bit of makeup, like looking nice when we go out. And I was the like, I'll wear my pajamas in public kind of person. So if my mom saw someone like dressed in pajamas on the road or grocery shopping, she might not say anything, but you might see her lip kind of curl in disgust, or you see her body language move away from the person. This is how we start to internalize what is known as implicit or invisible shame. And so this happens a lot in our family unit, in our culture. And so all of these start to show you, it's essentially like giving you this if function. If you express this part of yourself, you will be shamed, so suppress it. But this one, yeah, you can show. And so for me, what ended up happening was I love, obviously, psychology, the human experience, neuroscience, the body. My dad, who is an engineer, who I grew up hearing, dad is so smart, he's so powerful, he has it together, he's a provider, he's such a good man, he is the prize, like you want to be like that. I was like, I'm going to be a tax accountant and audit information systems. Oh my God, I hated doing that, but I forced myself into that role because I thought that's what people wanted to see from me. And thankfully, I've been able to undo all that, and now here I am. But I internalized so much shame about how being in the feeling side of things was bad. It was so feminine, and feminine is weak, and it's not logical, and you're just this crazy woman if you want to study those things, and you're silly, and you're not going to be taken seriously. So we can talk about that like logical shield that I put up as a way to try and keep shame at bay, and how I use perfectionism as a coping mechanism to keep shame at bay, and so on and so forth. So explicit is obvious. Implicit is this inherited subconscious body language, tone of voice, eye contact kind of stories we learn about how and what to express about ourselves in order to stay safe.
And I think it is so important to talk through that delineation. Like, yes, the explicit is like someone commenting on your body or commenting on your academic performance, or you fell over at sports day and everyone's laughing at you, and all of those kind of like very explicit things. But it's the silent shame. That is the hardest piece to unpick, which is why when my therapist in my first session said it's shame, I was like, no, it's not. I've never been bullied. I've been a straight A student. I was the gymnastics captain for this. I danced with the Royal Ballet, all these things. I looked fairly good. I've never been shamed about anything. But actually, I have been shamed implicitly and silently for every emotion that I've ever held in my family unit, because I live in a family where these emotions are just too big. Why are you so emotional? Why are you so angry? Why are you reacting like this? And that's really hard for people listening, because you might not have the explicit memories, because so much of it can be implicit. I don't remember my dad or my brother saying 100 times, why are you so emotional? But I know inherently in my body that my label is the emotional one, because silently I was seeing all the cues. I was seeing people recoil when there was an emotional expression. And that is how things proliferate in silence. And then shame proliferates in silence even further. So I want to ask you, as we start to round out this episode, if people are listening to this, like, yes, this is me. I was explicitly shamed. I was implicitly shamed. I've dealt with silent shame. I've really felt uncomfortable about X, Y, and Z for as long as I can remember. Where do people start? The million-dollar question. It is not overnight, but you are taking people on this deep, deep, beautiful journey. What are your thoughts on how to actually detox from shame?
Yes. Okay. So there is a 3-part transformational journey that I'm going to lay out for you. So number one, first thing that you're going to do, you probably have already done this if you're listening to this episode, but you're going to understand how your nervous system works. What this is going to do is this is going to normalize your body's functions, your emotional responses to things, and essentially why you are the way that you are. And that is an extremely important part of de-shaming and releasing shame, because a huge part of invisible and implicit shame is learning that your natural impulses as a human are shameful. And we need to unlearn that, including things like maybe sometimes you have BO after you go to the gym, right? And we get so embarrassed and like, oh my God, what's wrong with that? Oh my God, like deodorant never used to exist and all these other things. So we're just normalizing the human experience by learning how your body works and why it works that way. When it's like, nope, your body is just doing exactly what it's supposed to do based on the environment you have access to and the current state of your nervous system. That is step one. If you have not done that already, go and do that. Step two is really moving into this intentional phase of shame detoxing. This is comprised of 2 main steps. So the first one is making the unconscious conscious, which is what we already started to talk about, which is recognizing based on your childhood, where you grew up, your family unit, the way that your dad is, the way that your mom is, what are the shame stories that are driving your nervous system's way of navigating the world and essentially what you're allowed to express? This is where understanding shadow work, I think, is really powerful and important, and that shadow work is really this journey of intentionally uncovering and reclaiming suppressed parts of yourself and integrating your shadow self, which is made up of these suppressed parts, with the current identity that you have. So you're now no longer expending as much energy sustaining a shadow self and the self that you feel safe to express to the world. So you're no longer as fragmented and you're much more whole, and you can actually restore a lot of resiliency and balance and homeostasis to the nervous system by doing this, which in and of itself is going to help you detox from the weight of shame at a physiological and psychological level in the body. And the other part of this is now you are consciously having a relationship with implicit stories so that you can decide, well, do I want this to be a shame story for me now? So am I someone now that is like, I want to walk outside with my pajamas on and not have an emotional response to it? From there, what we're going to do is you're going to start to create somatic shame awareness. And this is a bit tricky because we think that we know, but because shame is so hidden, sometimes we don't know. And so what we're going to start to do is say, based on these shame stories that we have identified, like, I am unlovable. This is bad about me. This expression of me means that people aren't going to want me. For me, a big one was men don't want me. Like, men do not want me. I am too masculine. I am too loud. I'm too intense. I'm too tall. I'm too big, like all of these things. So mapping that story, I could start to say, okay, what situations are likely to trigger this? And how do I experience that trigger? So what we want to do is build a 360-degree view of ourselves experiencing a shame spiral. This is made up of four parts. And this is honestly some of the best work that I've ever done is outline this. And I'm like toying with bringing a fifth part in. So number one, how do you experience the situation through a physiological sensation? So let me give you an example of something that used to happen to me. I give an idea at work in a meeting. I was in sales, right? Like I give an idea, my boss shoots it down in not a nice way. My identity that is being the competent boss babe is so challenged in that moment that I start going into a shame spiral. My shoulders curl in. There's like a feeling in my gut. My cheeks are heated a little bit and I feel like a heaviness in the core of my body. This is a physiological sensation associated with shame in my body. Number two, what are the emotions that I'm experiencing? Well, I'm experiencing shame, but I'm also experiencing frustration, hopelessness, maybe even anger. And then I'm feeling weird about the fact that I'm angry because this is my boss. Like, of course they know better than me. This is the emotions or the emotional experience related to the event. Then we are moving into the behavior, the expressed behavior. So how do you respond and cope with the event? So for me, in a situation like that, like a lot of people, I move towards self-isolation and daydreaming. So now I'm dissociated from the meeting. I am daydreaming. I had plans with a friend later, but I'm messaging them to cancel because I need to go home and order food and not be seen by anybody because I'm in a state of shame. These three parts are all a response to the fourth part, which is the story or the meaning that your nervous system is responding to. So in that moment, what my nervous system was responding to was, oh my God, the people here that I work with do not see me as competent and capable. And because of that, I am bad. I am wrong. They don't want me. I do not fit in here and I do not belong here. That hits on that base level of survival, which is you are not worthy of survival. You're not worthy of being around these people. So this mapping gives us the 360-degree view of what is happening internally in our body. And we can map that to that underlying story or meaning from our nervous system, which is the actual root cause, so to speak, of what is happening. And then this is the part that is really powerful and difficult. We have to choose vulnerability-based behaviors in response instead of choosing shame-based behaviors. This is where having that one friend, being in a group program that is dedicated to this, where you have a WhatsApp chat or you have a space where you can just go and say, I'm feeling a lot of shame right now and I want to cancel a plan with my friend later, but I'm really trying not to. And this made me feel really bad about myself. That is how we start to create enough safety for you to say, I want a different story. I want a different response. So this is the initial part of shame detoxing because you are becoming so aware of it somatically that you can start to choose some different behaviors, and even becoming aware of it in this way for myself and a lot of people will detox and release shame from your body because for the first time, your relationship with the shame is different. So you're not suppressing it, you're rising it to the surface. And so what happens after that is you've started to detox some of the shame. And what I really want to emphasize here is how difficult this is because shame impacts our identity. What we are also doing as we're shame detoxing is we're actually taking out the infrastructure of our identity, which can be inherently destabilizing. And so I just want to acknowledge that you're not going crazy if you feel like you're getting worse before you get better. You're essentially removing your deepest coping mechanisms and saying like, great, I'm going to just remove these from my psyche and my nervous system. But what this does is, I really like this language I came up with yesterday. This is like giving yourself the gift of being an empty vessel of sensation. So you're now in a place where you can learn how to self-attune first. Because when shame is at play, we learn to attune to ourselves by attuning first to other people, which is people pleasing. And this is a survival mechanism. Because I don't trust myself to be worthy of access to safety, love, and connection being true and authentic, I need to observe other people's body language and how they see me in order to understand how to operate and navigate a situation to stay safe. We're removing that step of seeking external validation or resourcing or sourcing safety externally. And we're giving you this empty vessel, essentially, where shame is no longer as present to say, what am I actually experiencing in this moment? Do I want to be experiencing it? Do I want to be experiencing it with these people? And what are the actual needs that are going unfulfilled in my body right now? That is the void. this is really difficult. It can take a long time to even recognize what is happening, but this is so important because it is only from a place of having direct access to you, yourself, your essence, your nervous system, and your psyche without the disruption of what other people think about you that we know what we want, that we know who we are, that we know what our true self-expression actually is. Which when we have this process, this phase of self-attuning, which is like phase number two after shame detoxing, we can move into phase number three, which is where we experiment with somatically creating an identity that is no longer driven by shame, but is actually your identity when you choose to prioritize safety and self-expression and vulnerability-based behaviors, which means that now you can start to say, oh my God, I'm going into a shame spiral. I'm going to call my friend. I'm not going to punish myself for shaming myself. I'm not going to take the emotional responsibility of how other people treat me and make this entire thing my fault. There's a very clear distinction that you start to embody and feel, not just in your mind, but feel where you are and where other people are. And it's like, I think of it as this incredible nervous system, energetic shield where like someone could come up to you and be like, you suck. And you'd be like, that's really weird that you would say that to me because that's not true. Instead of internalizing that and that being like an arrow shot into your heart and having to process that. So the whole point is to get to this end phase of somatically rebuilding your identity as someone who prioritizes safety and self-expression by experimenting with self-expression in different environments to see what actually feels good for you. And then continuing to do the work so that you can lock that fucker into your nervous system and just live. So that is what you do.
Oh my God, I'm literally sat here like I want to be taking notes because you have just given us so much value there. You literally have just taken us on a journey that I'm sure people pay you a lot of money for, and rightly so, because you are an expert in this area. I just want to say I am so grateful for that. I wish we could keep going. I honestly know we could keep going for like 5 hours and we wouldn't even get halfway through the things that we want to talk about. But as we come to wrap up, I just want to say that everything you've said resonates so deeply with me. And for everyone listening, I don't want you to shame yourself for not being able to do these things, right? Like true safety and self-expression is impossible to begin with if you are never taught to feel safe in your body or to attune to your body or experience feelings or experience safety or experience vulnerability. If no one ever asked you, how do you really feel, honey? How are you ever going to be able to answer that question as an adult? So as Dana's saying, this is a journey and it starts in layers. You don't have to just sort it out overnight. It starts small. It starts with all the things that she's just taken us through. And I would say, go and work with Dana, go and work in one of her groups if you want to go on this journey deeper. And if that's not possible for you right now, head over to her TikTok. There is so much information over there. Truthfully, I've done a lot of my shame work on my own because I found that there was a limit in talk therapy that took me through to the critical understanding. But then as you've just explained, it goes deeper. It goes into the somatic. So I just wanted to say thank you so much. I'm so grateful for sharing everything that you have with us. And is there anything that you'd like to leave us with before we wrap up?
I love this quote. I've really been living by it lately. Shame dies when stories are told in safe spaces. And that is just so beautiful. I feel that so deeply in my body. And if you're listening to this and you feel that nervous readiness around, okay, I am ready to dive into this and to do that shame work, and you are looking for some sort of group program, the reason we're also doing this episode is because I've been researching this and building material around this for like over a year now. And I'm about to host my first ever de-shaming and shadow work live group program that is also going to go into soma energetic healing and bringing a clinical herbalist in to support me with this. That's 7 weeks. That entire journey that I just took you through is what we're going to be doing in the first 4 weeks. And the last 2 weeks is going to be all about building your identity somatically and really getting into the body. So I invite you to check out this program. It's called Unshackled. And it's just like, literally, I just imagine like shame shackles you and we're just shedding that. We're letting it go. And like Louis said, if that's not feasible for you right now, this podcast is amazing. Check out all of my free content and just let your shame die and put yourself in safe spaces. That is the human need and you are worthy of that.
So worthy. And it wasn't until I experienced it that I really started to believe, like, I am worthy of this. And I want everyone else to know that they are worthy of it too. And that's why we do this work, to remind you that you're not broken, you're not bad. And actually, you're not alone in feeling that way. If the whole world was just fucking honest, 85% of people would probably tell you that they feel exactly the same way, right?
Exactly.
Amen, sister. Thank you so much. This has been so amazing. And you need to come back on the podcast again. We need to not leave it a year and a half or 2.5 years. I couldn't even tell you how long it's been since the last one. So let's do this again soon. Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.